Well, bless your hearts. Here we are at the final session of this series that we've been doing on free will, the law of believing, and authority. And I just want to take a moment to review the scene for this trial in light of free will, the law of believing, and authority. Felix, who is over this, is the governor, and he has authority over the court granted to him by Rome. Does he have free will? Yes. When he chose the appointment as governor of this area, he accepted it. Is he operating believing? Yes, he definitely operates believing, as all men operate believing, both positively and negatively. And is he exercising his authority? Yes, and you will see it as we get into the trial itself. The next real character, I suppose we could call him, is Tertullus. He's the attorney for the Judeans, for the Ananias and the elders, the Sanhedrin Council. Is he operating free will? Well, yes, he accepted them as his client, and he's going to represent them. Is he believing? Yes, and you're going to see in his opening arguments that he lays out that he's reviewed things, he set it up, and he knows exactly where he wants to go with each part of it. Does he have authority? Yes, he has been authorized by not only the court to lay out the charges, but he's also authorized by his clients to represent them. How about Paul? Well, Paul has free will. You may say no, because, you know, his situation in Jerusalem, and now he's been jailed, and he has certain restrictions on him in regard to that. But he did have free will on his choice to go to Jerusalem, that's for sure, to start off with. And then with that mob that accused him of bringing Gentiles and into the temple and defiling it, you know, he did get up and speak, and he did start to speak. Of course, they got out of hand and went berserk and started a riot, but still in all, he did speak up to the mob while he was at the temple. Is he operating the law of believing? Absolutely, he is operating the law of believing, and particularly in the situation where there was a assassination plot made against Paul, that his nephew learned about it, and he sent him to speak to Lysias, and then they got transferred to Caesarea. So he's also exercising his right as a Roman citizen, and certainly he is operating the authority that he has over the evil spirit realm as a son of God. So we have these various different things going on. So here we are in chapter 24, and as I shared before, Paul can operate his spiritual authority over the spirit realm. He doesn't have authority over people. He's got authority that God has given him over the spirit realm. He can block those spirits from functioning in the men in this particular situation in the court area. But he, you know, these men still have their own minds, and many of them have unrenewed minds. But as I said before, the reason you would exercise your authority is because you cannot change the mind of a spirit. You can change the mind of someone who is unrenewed. You can get to their heart, and you'll see how at different points he does get to people's hearts. So here we are in Acts chapter 24, and Tertullus begins his opening argument and sets forth these things with letting Felix know that, you know, we enjoy great quietness, meaning speaking particularly of the citizenship there. As I shared before, Felix was responsible for the decline in robberies and other crimes and things that he took care of as governor. And so, you know, he kind of speaks real well to him. Then he says, and we'll start here in verse 5, where he lays out the case and the accusations against Paul. In verse 5, it says, "For we have found this man a pestilent fellow and a mover of seditions among the Jews throughout the world and a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes, who also hath gone about to profane the temple, whom we took and would have judged according to our law. But the chief captain, Lysias, came upon us and with great violence took him away out of our hands, commanding his accusers to come unto thee, by examining of whom thyself mayest take knowledge of all these things whereof we accuse him. And the Jews also assented, saying that these things were so." So, you know, they're, yeah, you know, then you could hear the gavel coming down. Order in the court, quiet, settle down. Felix tapping his gavel. Number one, they said he's a pestilent fellow, but that's kind of an unclear thing. But he is a mover of seditions among the Jews throughout the empire, is really what he's saying. Tertullus is accusing Paul and the Jews of treason against the emperor. That is a capital offense, and that would require the Romans to execute him. He also says he's a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes. That would also give them authority to execute Paul, or they're asking, really what they're asking is, we want to judge him according to our law, so give us permission to execute him. So, you know, you can execute him for treason, let us execute him for being a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes. However, the word sect is really the word opinion. And the Romans allowed for the all the peoples that they within their empire to worship whatever god they worshipped, how they wanted to worship him. And even among the Jews, there were differences. You had the Sadducees who did not believe in the resurrection, and you had the Pharisees who do. So there were differences of opinion even within the Judeans. So that's kind of a very spurious accusation against Paul. But again, you know, they want to pile the charges on and as many counts as you can. And then he profaned the temple. That, according to Judean law, was a capital offense, and it would grant them authority to execute him. As I said, the Romans allowed a certain autonomy to the different religious sects within their empire, or different communities, different denominations, and so forth, as well as the Judeans. The Judeans were allowed to handle things according to their law. You know, we talk about today, we talk about allowing people from Islam to that are in the United States, both citizens as well as people who have immigrated here and maybe not have their citizenship. They want to judge things according to Sharia law. That doesn't mean everybody, you know, that you as a Christian are going to be judged according to Sharia law, that, you know, all of a sudden our courts are going to say, okay, well, you did such and such. You're a homosexual, we'll chop your head off because we have a constitution we go by. But they allow a certain amount of autonomy to allow them to judge things according to their laws, like profaning the temple and stuff like that. So it's not unusual You know, we kind of think that, I don't know what we think about the history of the world, but they were under certain laws and they allowed certain privileges and so forth among people too, even the Romans. So, but these are the charges that they're laying before Paul, laying before Felix, because they want him executed. Whether you execute him or we execute him, we prefer you to do it, because the adversary always wants somebody, you know, wanting to lay it in somebody else's hands, so that they can take the blame for it later. But then they are also seeking permission from the Roman government, so they have the cover there. So, you know, it's just these things are happening. So that's what they laid out for him. Verse 10, then Paul, after that the governor had beckoned unto him to speak, Paul didn't say a word, but now the governor, who is over the court, who has authority in this court? Felix. And he beckons to Paul, you can act as your own defense. That is part of the Roman law. You can act as your own counsel. And he allows Paul to speak. And he waited for him to speak, answered, for as much as I know that thou hast been of many years a judge unto this nation, I do more cheerfully answer for myself. Yes, excuse me. Felix has been there a while. He understands the Judean law. He sat in on other cases and oversaw other cases, and even cases that the that were turned back to the Jews to handle it according to their law. He's probably sat in on a number of those cases, if not all of them, and just saw them through. So he was aware of how that functioned, the different charges and so forth. In addition, being there in Caesarea, there were a great group of Christians, of believing ones there, and he had heard things with them, and he was also familiar with the beliefs of the Christians. So, you know, he had this background and knew some of these things. And so Paul says, hey, this is great because you understand these various different things. And it's great. Verse 11, because thou mayest understand that there are yet but 12 days since I went up to Jerusalem for to worship. He's telling Felix, you know that I have not been a citizen here. I have not been around this area for quite a long time. So their accusations are pretty spurious because you know who the citizens are of this communities, and you know that I've only been here 12 days. You know, I'm just visiting. And they neither found me in the temple disputing with any man, neither raising up the people, neither in the synagogue nor in the city, neither can they prove the things whereof they now accuse me. And he's read Lysias's report. He's read the arrest report. He's read all these different things. And none of those particular accusations appear in the documents that he's received from Lysias. So, you know, he's doing his due diligence. You know, he has a responsibility in the court, and he takes it seriously. That's why he's where he is and doing what he does. So, pretty neat. Verse 14, but this I confess unto thee, that after the way, and like I told you, he's familiar with the believers, and the believers originally were called followers of the way, because Jesus Christ said, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and the believers referred to themselves as followers of the way. They later got the title of Christians, and sometime I'll share with you teaching and work that I have done, that Christians was originally a negative, a slur against the believers, because they kept talking about having Christ in them. And we might go over that record when Herod talks about, "Thou almost persuadeth me to be a Christian." He is kind of sticking it to Paul, or sticking it to the believers in that, because he's proud of being an atheist or a follower of whatever Roman gods there are. But in any case, that's something. He says, "After the way which they call heresy." Again, the word heresy is the same word as a sect. It's an opinion. They've already accepted other opinions, like the opinion of the Sadducees. So, you know, it's not nothing new. It's just a different opinion. "So worship I the God of my fathers, believing all things which are written in the law and in the prophets, and have hope toward God, which they themselves also allow, that there shall be a resurrection of the dead, both of the just and the unjust." He's sharing with them what the beliefs are, and who's bringing the charges? Well, it's the chief priest and the elders, and they're primarily Pharisees. And he's saying, "You allow for it. Now, after many years, I came to bring alms to my nation and offerings." And remember, I told you that Felix is kind of a corrupt guy. His ears must have just went boing. Offerings, alms, money, cash? Woo! "Whereupon certain Jews from Asia found me purified in the temple, neither with multitude nor with tumult." Now he brings in these Jews that are from where? Asia. And they're just outside of his jurisdiction. And he's saying, these charges aren't coming from the locals. These charges are coming from people who followed me in from Asia. People who have, that have a bone to pick with me over what I teach. But there's nothing, I have not done anything worthy of the accusations that are being brought. And if anybody should be here to testify, it should be those Jews which came from Asia. And I would imagine that part of that was in the report from Lysias. So it's really something. "Who ought to have been here before thee and object if they had aught against me. Or else let these same here say if they have found any evil doing in me while I stood before the council." Remember that he was taken by Lysias to the council, and Lysias sat in on it while the council made accusations and so forth against Paul. And then Paul laid out, started talking about the resurrection, and there was such an argument between the Sadducees and the Pharisees that Lysias had to shut the whole thing down. And that's why he sent him to Caesarea also. So he's really doing it. Is he exercising his free will? Absolutely. Is he operating the law of believing? Yes, he has his case laid out just as perfectly and as beautifully as Tertullus, and even more. And is he operating authority? Yes, because these, you know, things are said, and it's not going to get out of hand here. He's not going to allow the rioting and all that, and Felix is not going to allow it. So, well, and it says in verse 20, "Except it be for this one voice that I cried standing among them, touching the resurrection of the dead, I am called into question by you this day." And that is exactly why Lysias had to shut it down, because there was an argument about it, and transfer the case to Felix. And when Felix heard these things, having more perfect knowledge of the way, that way or the way, he deferred them and said, when Lysias the chief captain shall come down, I will know the uttermost of your matter. I could just see this, Tertullus jumping up and saying, I object, I object, I object. And Felix just looking him in the eye and saying, counselor, you open the door. When you mentioned Lysias, you open the door. He has every right to call on Lysias. He has every right to bring it up. You said it, sir. Court is in recess until such time that Lysias makes his appearance here. And it's going to take some time. It's, you know, we talk about speedy trials, and you see how long our trials go. These men have things to do. They have responsibilities to keep. They have responsibilities to other people. And although he is over the court in the area, and he will request Lysias to come, it's not an immediate thing where Lysias drops everything today and runs to the court tomorrow. Besides, there's another part, because I told you this Felix is kind of a crooked little guy, you know. And he heard that there was alms and there were offerings, so he knows there's some money involved here, and Paul's got a little bit of money. Let's see where this goes. So, anyways, verse 23, and he commanded a centurion to keep Paul and to let him have liberty, that he should forbid none of his acquaintances to minister or to come unto him. Has Paul's situation improved? Absolutely. Now he's at liberty, he can go, he can have guests, all of these different things that he can do. I'm sure he could probably attend fellowships and teach and all of these other things. So Paul's situation is improving, but it is not over yet. So what does he need to do? His argument has been good. Up to this point, he has convinced Felix that it has merit to it, that it meets some of the legal requirements and so forth. And so he has exercised believing, but it is not finished. So he still needs to keep on what? Believing. But is he operating believing? Absolutely. Is he operating his authority? Yes, as a Christian, as a believing man, as a son of God, he is operating his authority. And as a Roman citizen, he is also operating his authority. Really terrific. Verse 24, and after certain days, when Felix came with his wife Drusilla, which was the Jewess, he sent for Paul and heard him concerning faith in Christ. Isn't that nice? Pretty interesting. Drusilla is his wife. She was actually married to somebody else, and he hired some kind of witch doctor guy or something to get Drusilla to come over to him, and apparently he was successful in that, and Drusilla is his wife. History records that Drusilla was killed in an eruption at Mount Vesuvius. So it's a lot of historical things about it. Anyways, verse 25, and as he reasoned of righteousness, temperance, and judgment to come, Felix trembled and answered, go thy way for this time. When I have a convenient season, I will call for thee. This word trembled, it kind of means that he had awe of Paul, or respect. I mean, Paul's presentation was so logical, so beautiful, and so put together. What I said, you know, Felix has an unrenewed mind, but as Paul is teaching and putting these things together, and the logic is there, and, you know, Felix is not a stupid man, Felix is a trained man, and these things are making sense to him, and it kind of hit his heart. But he's also crooked and likes money, has a love of money. But so that's what happened. Verse 26, he hoped also that money should have been given him of Paul, that he might loose him. Wherefore he sent for him oftener and communed with him. So, you know, he enjoyed Paul speaking, and he had respect for Paul speaking, but, you know, he was kind of hoping that Paul would make a little campaign contribution or something for the next governorship or something. But in any case, that's what happened. And verse 27, but after 2 years, Porcius Festus came into Felix's room, and Felix, willing to show the Jews a pleasure or grace, left Paul bound. So that was Felix's conclusion of the situation. Why he was recalled to Rome, there's really no records of Felix after this. The only thing that I could find historically was what I shared with you about Drusilla. But anyways, Festus comes in and takes on the responsibility in the area. Now, Festus apparently, there's little known about him before this, but apparently he had some type of responsibility in Jerusalem, probably maybe was an attorney and had responsibilities as an attorney, because later on, Festus was successful in bringing a lawsuit against King Herod for violating the privacy rights of the temple. And he brought it before Nero. So he wound up going back to Rome and handling this case against King Herod. But at this particular time, he's going in to serve as governor of it. And he is in Jerusalem at this point. Now, chapter 25, now when Festus was come into the province, after 3 days, he ascended from Caesarea to Jerusalem. So he's up in Jerusalem. You know, he came in, took over for Felix. I'm sure they sent Felix off, you know, with some pomp and circumstance. And then, you know, he's made the governor, and that's what happens there. So, anyways, he becomes the governor, and he goes up to Jerusalem. Then the high priest and the chief of the Jews informed him against Paul and besought him and desired favor against him, that he would send for him to Jerusalem, laying wait in the way to kill him. You know, part of his responsibility is political. He's the governor, and you have the high priest and these people in Jerusalem. It's one of the major cities there, and Festus is going to Jerusalem, and while he's there, of course, he's going to do the political thing. He's going to meet with certain people because they exercise certain powers with the Jews there. So, you know, he's trying to curry favor in a way, but they want to get Paul back to Jerusalem because, remember, there were over 40 men that had made an oath. They had made an oath that they would kill Paul, that they would neither eat or drink anything until Paul was dead. And 2 years have gone by. They must have been pretty hungry at this particular time. These skinny little guys. Anyways, that was the deal. And they had more opportunity to kill Paul while he was on the way. So they wanted to do that. But Festus didn't want to. But Festus, verse 4, answered that Paul should be kept at Caesarea, and that he himself would depart shortly thither. Let them therefore, said he, which among you are able, go down with me and accuse this man if there be any wickedness in him. I doubt that they traveled together. That wasn't the meaning of it. But, you know, come while I'm there at the same time, because as governor, you know, I have to travel to different cities and communities and so forth, and I have other responsibilities. But while I'm at Caesarea, why don't you come down and let's talk about the situation with Paul. Verse 6, and when he had tarried among them more than 10 days, he went down to Caesarea, and the next day, sitting on the judgment seat, commanded Paul to be brought. You know, there he went into the court, sat down in that big chair, and, you know, this is nice, you know, kind of, ooh, I'm there. Verse 7, and when he was come down, the Jews which came down from Jerusalem stood round about and laid many and grievous complaints against Paul, which they could not prove. While he answered for himself, neither against the law of the Jews, neither against the temple, nor yet against Caesar have I offended anything at all. But Festus, willing to do the Jews a pleasure, show them some grace, answered Paul and said, wilt thou go up to Jerusalem and there be judged of these things before me? Then said Paul, I stand at Caesar's judgment seat where I ought to be judged. I haven't violated anything. I haven't violated any of the Hebrew laws. I have not violated any of the Roman laws. I'm just not guilty of any of this. I want to go before Caesar. Then it says, then Paul said, verse 10, I stand at Caesar's judgment seat where I ought to be judged. To the Jews have I done no wrong, as thou very well knowest. For if I be offender or have committed anything worthy of death, I refuse not to die. But if there be none of these things whereof these accuse me, no man may deliver me unto them. I appeal unto Caesar. Remember, God told him when he was back in Jerusalem, as thou hast witnessed and testified of me here in Jerusalem, thou shalt also testify of me in Rome. Paul kept that. That's what he was believing for. That's where he was directing his heart to go. And bam, he nails it right there. And they have nothing else to say. Then, verse 12, then Festus, when he had conferred with the council, answered, hast thou appealed unto Caesar? Unto Caesar shalt thou what? Go. So God told Paul, you're going to be in Rome, and Paul believed it. Is Paul exercising believing? Is he exercising his free will? Is he exercising the authority? As a Roman citizen, he had every right to exercise that. And as a son of God, boy, God's word to him, he was ready to go. So that's it. So Paul determined, I'm going to go to Jerusalem. See how these things interrelate? You know, like I say, there are other people who have authority, but you always try to play, you know, physically and secularly, carnally, I guess there's different terms that you can use for it, but there are situations in life. I remember when we were first working these great truths regarding authority, Connie and I, my wife and I, and she was working at a company and there were some conflicts and things within the company. And we knew that there were some things spiritually wrong there. And so Connie would go to work and she would exercise her authority. She was given a cubicle at her company. They assigned that cubicle to her. So as far as the company was concerned and as far as we were concerned, Connie had authority around her cubicle. Excuse me. There was also a conference room. and the company would sign out or sign over that conference room to different people who had to have conferences. So what Connie would do is she would go in and secure the conference room to meet with people. So now who's in authority over the conference room? Connie. So she would go in and handle situations there. We still have to deal with unrenewed mind. But like I say, we can convince an unrenewed mind, or we can have impact on an unrenewed mind. Look at the impact that Paul had on Felix. But that doesn't mean that particularly a judgment may go our way or not. But at least we can work with someone with an unrenewed mind and present an argument and have it heard and have it understood. And many times you'll find yourself in those situations. Certainly your own home. You have the authority within your own home. You don't have to wait for, quote unquote, a green light revelation, which I still don't understand exactly what that was, apparently. But I do know I have authority to exercise at will the things that go on in my home, and I forbid evil spirits to function in my home, on our property, in any way, shape, or form. So these are the things that we as believing ones have the opportunity, and they interrelate, and we should take advantage. I don't know if that's a good word, but utilize these to the fullness that God has given these great things to us. Free will, the law of believing, and our authority in Christ. So anyways, that's it. Well, verse 13, it says, "And after certain days, King Agrippa and Bernice came unto Caesarea to salute Festus." So I imagine Herod as the king, or Herod Agrippa is who it's speaking about, Herod Agrippa. He came to welcome Festus. I'm sure they had a big to-do. And like I said, this is this beautiful resort city. I'm sure they just had a great time. Bernice happens to be the sister of Drusilla. Drusilla is her younger sister. And also, Bernice happens to be Agrippa's sister also. So Drusilla, and this is Herod Agrippa II, not the one that Jesus dealt with. John the Baptist dealt with. This is King Agrippa II. This is King Agrippa I's son, who happens to be the sister to both Drusilla and Bernice. Now, there are accusations of an incestuous relationship. I don't know, but anyways, they are there together. And they came unto Caesarea to salute Festus, welcome him in. This Festus was probably before Gunsmoke. That's an archaic reference. You probably won't get it, you younger people. And when they had been there many days, Festus declared Paul's cause unto the king, saying, "There is a certain man left in bonds by Felix, about whom, when I was at Jerusalem, the chief priests and elders of the Jews informed me, desiring to have a judgment against him." So he brings this up to Herod because, hey, you know, here he's there. Herod's come there. He's welcoming Festus as the new governor of the thing. And Festus is there, and he's delighted to be there. This is his new assignment and so forth. And he says to Herod, "Hey, boss, I really like your insight on this. I have a situation that was left over from Felix. And, you know, he's gone now, and now this falls on me. And I would like your insight. You've been here a while, and you know, you're just terrific and all this other stuff. So it goes a little further. So anyways, and so they do all this talking, and then finally they send for Paul. And I'd like to go to chapter 26, verse 1. It says, "Then Agrippa said unto Paul, Thou art permitted to speak for thyself. Then Paul stretched forth the hand and answered for himself." Here we go again. Who is in charge? Herod, he's the king. King Agrippa, the second, he's in charge, and he is the one in authority, and he gives Paul permission to speak for himself. And there it is. And Paul takes right up and says, "I think myself happy, King Agrippa, because I shall answer for myself this day before thee, touching all the things whereof I am accused of the Jews. I, especially because I know thee to be an expert in all the customs and questions which are among the Jews, wherefore I beseech thee, hear me patiently." Beautiful. "My manner of life from my youth, which was at the first among mine own nation at Jerusalem, know all the Jews." You know, everybody's aware that I started off in Jerusalem. "Which knew me from the beginning, if they would testify that after the most straitest sect or opinion of our religion, I was one of those guys. Unto which promise the 12 tribes instantly serving God day and night hope to come, for which hope's sake, King Agrippa, I am accused of the Jews." So he's right in, and that is Agrippa's kind of bailiwick. He is very familiar with this and knows all about this. "Why should it be thought a thing incredible with you that God should raise the dead? I verily thought to myself that I ought to do many things contrary to the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth." And he continues on with this dissertation. So that's beautiful. He continues to speak. And then in verse 24, I want to pick this up, because he's going and he's sharing these things, and it is beautiful, and he's handling these things. And then Festus jumps in, and as he thus spake for himself, Festus said with a loud voice, "Paul, thou art beside thyself. Much learning doth make thee mad." Paul, you are out of your blankety blank mind. What in the heck are you talking about? But Agrippa is very familiar with this, and this is a very logical explanation. This is a very clear thing. Festus thinks you're gone. But meanwhile, Agrippa has heard these things, and he says in verse 25, "But he said, I am not mad, most noble Festus, but speak forth the words of truth and soberness. For the king knows of these things, before whom also I speak freely. For I am persuaded that none of these things are hidden from him, for this thing was not done in a corner. King Agrippa, believest thou the prophets? I know that thou believest." Verse 28, "Then Agrippa said unto Paul, Almost thou persuadest me to be a Christian." That those words are really were said with a sneer on Agrippa's face. Agrippa was starting to get a little irritated and didn't want this thing, you know, do you believe in all of this? That kind of challenged him, and you know, he just kind of let go. But anyways, verse 29, "And Paul said, I would to God that not only thou, but also all that hear me this day were both almost and altogether such as I am, except these bonds. And when he had thus spoken, the king rose up and the governor and Bernice and they that sat with them. And when they were gone aside, they talked between themselves, saying, "This man doeth nothing worthy of death or of bonds." They could care less, really, you know, about arguments among the Jews and all of these different points. They had a specific thing to carry out, and they needed to make sure it was clear within the Roman, the confines of the Roman law. So they were very concerned about this, because to put a Roman citizen to death, that was a big challenge to them, and they didn't see any reason. Then said Agrippa unto Festus, "This man might have been set at liberty if he had not appealed unto Caesar." And he didn't want to do that. So they're going to send him to Rome to appear before Caesar, which is a better way to handle the situation than for him to be sent back to Jerusalem. Because if he had gotten set free, there are those 40 guys, above 40 guys, who are going to try and kill him that have taken this oath and they've been waiting for over 2 years. This is probably about AD 59 that has taken place. So it's a challenge to them. They have the authority to believe from the negative aspect. So he goes before King Agrippa, who is over Festus. Festus is the governor, and you've got the king over the governor, and there are lines of authority there that they are following. It ends up that Paul then goes on a little boat ride. But I want you to see that how free will, the law of believing, and authority all work together in life. When we understand this and we see how it all functions together, then we can live powerfully and we can live victoriously. Because ultimately, in Acts 28, verse 31, it says that Paul had his own hired house. Who has authority there? In Rome, he saw all that wanted to visit him. So in his house, he had complete authority. He exercised the law of believing, and he exercised his free will. Whatever areas where you have spiritual authority as well as physical authority, like your home, like in the places on your job, you should exercise all these things so that you may live powerfully, that we can live dynamically in this life. When we understand that there are three factors, our free will, the law of believing, and the laws of authority, and how they all interrelate, we may live powerfully, and we can also live victoriously and redirect ourselves to a fuller, more fruitful life. God bless you.